This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly. 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer. And for that matter, what is the difference between recorded and pre-recorded?
Welcome back inside the MDN studios for the MGO Blog Roundtable. The MGO Blog Roundtable is brought to you by Homeshore Lending. Homeshore Lending is a local company, and you'll work directly with the owner, a Michigan man, Matt Demarest.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. It is time for the MGO Blog Roundtable. Joining me, as he does every week, for this hour, right across from me from MGO Blog, Brian Cook. Brian, how are you this morning?
I'm well.
You have your Diet Coke.
Are they a sponsor? Why are you mentioning that?
Because it's like, you know, you without Diet Coke is like peanut butter without the jelly, man.
Wow, yeah, it's early in the morning. I need a little bit of caffeine. Come on.
And on the phone, we have Craig Ross, live from Hawaii. Craig, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Sam. How are you doing? How are you doing, Brian?
Yeah, doing great. Hey, so no Ed Fang this week, as spring break is upon us, and so, you know, if you have kitties, you can actually get out and go somewhere unless you work on a radio station like Ira and I, and you're covering the tournament, that kind of thing. But guys, this is our first opportunity to talk about Michigan in tournament action. So there are two games before we start talking about Texas Tech. There are two games in the tournament thus far. Just your takeaways other than the fact that they won.
Well, I mean, Montana was not last year's Montana team.
My God.
They didn't have 2-6-8 guys. And you could tell that from the opening tip, right? You're like, where is the other guy? And then you can see him way down at the other end. It's like he's just barely on the screen. So not a whole lot to take away from that, right? They just overwhelmed them, and that's what happens when you have a guy with a headband who's a wing playing center.
And you just had some the one guy on that squad – that seemed like he could give him trouble, and I can't remember his name. I just remember him looking like he was always angry.
Pridgett?
Always moving in like a frenetic pace. Like,
yeah, Pridgett, the guy that was on Teske, right?
Yeah, I may have been. I'm not sure, but he was wired. He got mad at a few of the calls. I think he jumped in the passing lane a couple of times. But like you said, there was no real takeaway after the opening tip, because I said after the game, if you watch the opening tip, you watch the game.
Right.
That was the game, the opening tip. And I felt like, I don't know how much this really gets you prepared for, if as far as level of competition for an intensity, what you're going to see from Florida. To Michigan's credit, they came out and really, you know, got to the basket on Florida early. I was looking pretty good, and then Florida busted out the zone and really kind of disrupted Michigan a bit.
Well, in the Montana game, there was, I think, a couple things worth noting. One is that Michigan's defense was really, really good, and it took Montana 6 minutes to actually get a shot at the basket that was a legitimate shot. And also, it's worth noting that I think Jordan Poole had a really good defensive game. Now, it's true Montana isn't very good, but still Poole came out, I thought, played well. Now, I know Yaklich after the game said that Poole gave up a 0.2 on defense, which he called a very high score. Now, I have no idea what 0.2 means. But if Weirach can have, T. Mills call in to trash me during one of our shows about John Teske, maybe Yaklich can call in and tell us what a 0.2 is or how they measure that. But Coach Yak seemed very proud of Poole, and this number is apparently a very, very good defense. Very good defensive number. Two other things about the game, about the Montana game that were, I think, worth noting is last year we had trouble with them. We got off to a 10-0 deficit, and then Charles Matthews sort of pulled us through that game. And again, Matthews had a good offensive game. He had 22 points on 15 shot equivalents. And the bothersome thing was we turned it over way too much. so that Montana ended up actually with plus four on the abstraction of extra shots created, because we lost the game on the boards and on the offensive boards, and we lost the game on turnovers. So there was some bad there, but I think you guys are basically right. Once the tip went up, the game was over.
Yeah, I just felt like Michigan's biggest opponent in that game was complacency. They just were way too much for that version of Montana. They beat Montana at full strength, even if they had their guy who had been out since February. But that version, they just had no chance. They had no chance.
Yeah, it was good to see Matthews get to the rim.
Mm-hmm.
So he was 7-9 from two and looked like more of the player we saw last year. And a little bit of that was the fact that they just didn't have any size. So he was comfortable kind of getting out there and making some moves and then not worried about a shot getting blocked.
All right, so then you go to the Florida game, a team that been playing really well here in the latter stages of the season. In watching the game unfold, first of all, you had to be really happy with Michigan being on the attack early, but then some early foul trouble from Iggy is gonna clamp down on that some, and then they go zone, that's gonna clamp down on some of the driving, and really felt like, and I wonder if you guys agree, I really felt like there was a span there where Michigan got good looks and Jordan Poole got good looks specifically. That some of which just didn't go down. Now, Brian made the point off air that he finished 4-for-9 from three. But after the game, he was talking more about his overall shooting percentage, 5-for-15 from the field. And he said, man, I felt good. Shots felt good. Felt like I got good looks. I wasn't forcing anything. I'm really happy with how I did. And that was, you know, obviously you're happy with their win, but I was happy with his shot selection in that game.
Yeah, there was one kind of long, too, that he took off the dribble. Mm-hmm. But other than that, I thought most of his looks were at least a good idea. There were a couple ones where he had a quick trigger, but, you know, there were ineffective closeouts, so I thought those were fine shots. And, you know, Twitter is pretty touchy about Jordan Poole these days.
Right.
So he came off a curl screen and took a good look from the top of the key early in the game. And people started grumbling about it, and I was like, "That's the play is like for that shot." So,
right,
like if you want to yell at someone, yell at Beilein, right? Like,
right.
So he had a good game, and I thought, Michigan, Florida scored I think 5 points over a span of 11 minutes in the second half, and that was not a fluke. They continually kept driving into just death, and they were throwing up this garbage at the rim, and they had no ideas about how they could get better shots. You know, you got Teske switching on to Nembhard, and that's fine,
right?
Like, he got him like with 2 minutes left in the game, and before that he had just killed two or three shot clocks by being like, I can take this guy, and that was not the case. So, you know, Michigan, when they come up against a team that has a really ISO focus and does not have a structured offense that can get you good open looks based on screens and whatnot, they just eat it up. And I think they're going to see a team like that in Texas Tech tonight as well.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. And I'm curious, Craig, because we all talk about this team. They get into these ruts, offensively, but they're able to endure despite those offensive ruts because their defense is so good. So in the first half, it was a little troubling that Florida was so good from three. They went into the half, and, you know, one of the things, one of the adjustments, and I remember one of the players talking about this after the game, said, look, what we saw from them on film was they were, a shot fake drive team, at least, or so we thought, and we get in the game, and they are knocking down, shooting these threes and knocking them down. So we got to adjust our thought process a bit in the second half and be more attentive when it comes to, fighting through screens or how we close out and maybe forcing them to drive a little bit as opposed to, you know, playing off and thinking that they're going to try to drive it to the basket, playing for the three and then play off of that. I don't know if that was what led to their increased effectiveness, but Florida was not the same team from 3-point range in the second half.
No, they started off 6 of 11 and they finished 3 of 15. Mm-hmm. Go ahead, Craig.
Yeah, no, that's exactly what I was going to say. You have to look at that first half carefully, though. I rewatched that game last night, and Florida started 6 of 11, but they weren't really great looks. I mean, a couple of them were okay. They banked. I mean, they threw up one brick that banked in. It just didn't feel sustainable. Plus, you look at that 6 for 11 run. I mean, Florida went off the court scoring 28 points. That's not a lot of points when you hit 6 threes. That means you had 18 points from 3 and 10 other points in the half. So it wasn't really an impressive, I thought, first half for Florida offensively. I just felt like, you know, some threes went in, including a couple of difficult ones and the ridiculous one that was about 4 feet long but somehow went in the basket. So, and in the second half, then, as Brian points out, they started missing them. They went 3 for their next 15. Michigan had a 14-0 run starting late in the first half through early in the second half, and the Michigan got up 43-28, and the game was over because Florida just couldn't really do much with the Michigan defense, even though Michigan shot 42% from the game and made, well, I think we were like 5 of 17 from 3. No, that's wrong. 7 of 21, so we shot a third. Poole had made a couple. And so even with that, it just didn't feel like Florida was going to make a dent. The other big thing for Michigan in this game was Michigan really beat them up on the offensive boards. And that's not ordinary for Michigan, but Teske had a good game on the offensive boards. Livers had a couple, and by the time the dust cleared, it was 11-5 on offensive rebounds. And
well, for whatever reason, Florida is very, very bad at defensive rebounding.
Yeah, and they weren't any good at offensive either, and that was a big part of the game. Michigan is, Ken Pom had them, Florida rated at 25. Michigan was a strikingly better team. Florida finished the game, I think, at 0.8 points per possession, which is exactly the same as what Montana did, and they actually scored fewer points than Montana, even though they made nine threes in the game. And I would like to say, how come we can't get this officiating in the Big Ten that we got in the Montana and Florida games, which I thought both...
Well, the Florida game did include Kelly Pfeiffer, so you did get a Big Ten ref in the Florida game.
That's true. We did get Kelly Pfeiffer in the Florida game. But in any event...
You know, how about as we get to a break, guys, how about just a few of them, a few entry feeds that, I mean, Michigan actually got the ball in the post effectively against a couple of mismatches that, you know, they were few and far between, but they were there in that game against Florida.
I mean, they've clearly been working on it. So Teske gets a bucket, and then a couple more are long. So I think Teske has a turnover on one, and then he has that shot where he can't use the backboard because he's just been taken too far by the pass. But that's what they got to do, and they got to keep working on that, and they got to get that pass, that specific pass, down, so that the switching gets punished.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I don't know if you want to go to a break or you want to talk about this because I have some thoughts.
Okay, yeah, well, hold them. We'll pick up there on the other side, and then we'll get into Texas Tech as well here on the MGO Blog, Roundtable here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, The Ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTKA.com. Back with the MGO Blog Roundtable, Sam Webb, Brian Cook on the other side of me, and Craig Ross on the phone live from Hawaii. And Craig, before we went to the break, we were talking about Michigan doing a better job in the Florida game of getting the ball to John Teske in the post.
Yeah, I think they did. I also think there's a certain endemic problem with this. I mean, and I'd appreciate Brian's thoughts and your thoughts particularly about it. Certainly the best passer on the Michigan team is Xavier Simpson. But John Teske is also a pretty good passer, and he doesn't turn the ball over ever. And maybe they're the best two passers on the team, in fact. And on the 1-5 switches, on the ball screens and the 1-5 switches, often over the year you've seen the big player sagging away from X, and it makes it very difficult for him to make the entry pass, even though Teske may be checked by a guy who's a foot shorter. And, you know, ordinarily what you might see with your point guard is them punishing that by making threes. And while X's three-point shooting has improved a lot this year, I think he was about 20 or 21% last year, and he's a little over 30% this year, it still isn't good enough to really punish that particular tactic. And the other thing is that the other Michigan players who you would think would have an easier time making that entry pass just really haven't been very adept at it at all. And the more I went back and looked at it, the more it seemed that, Teske plays some part of, this. One is, I don't think he's sufficiently active in posting up, particularly when there's a smaller guy on him. And two, one thing I noticed is he isn't calling for the ball with his hands. He's not really providing great targets for the for the passer to get the ball into the post. You know, and I think this may be a big deal in the coming game, but this is something that with next year, with I think almost certainly X and Teske coming back at least, that Michigan's got to work on, perhaps in part with X becoming a somewhat more efficient three-point shooter. If he pushes it up another 3 or 4%, that'll be a big deal. And another part of it, you know, would be, I think, Teske giving the passer a better target, because I think right now he isn't doing that as well as he should. I don't know what you guys are seeing, but that's what I'm seeing.
Well, it's just not something that Michigan does. So,
they
have never posted at all in the Beeline era, and there's the one time Mitch McGarry got to post, and he was very excited. And I think that that's something that they're going to have to change a little bit, because with all the switching, and it's only going to get more common as we go along here, you know, you have this kind of new generation of NBA style big that is able to switch 1 to 5 and make it work. They've got to be able to have better answers for that. And the most obvious one is to go punish the switch down low, especially when you have a guy like Teske who has an unprecedented turnover rate. His turnover rate is probably too low.
That's funny. Your point though is one of the things that I've heard mentioned inside of you. Throw him the ball, he's not going to turn it over. That's one part of the getting the players on the court, getting them in line with what we're trying to do. You got to trust that if you give them the basketball, a bad thing is probably not going to happen. Now here's the flip side of that. And one of the things, another thing is, in keeping with this, that I think they're going to have to work on in the offseason, I think John Teske has exceptional hands, better hands than I think he's given credit for. We see that in pick and roll scenarios. We see that with him catching the ball in the post. Catching the ball on balance, though, is something that I think is a feature of his game that he's going to have to work on. And then I think Craig makes a great point. I mean, posting a guy and making yourself a big target, that's on Teske. Calling for the ball is on Teske. One of the other things that you can see them do, a lot of times they run that pick and roll at the top, so it makes for a more difficult entry pass. You saw Xavier Simpson, a very simple, from the elbow, bounce pass because of the angle. So I think, some of the angles are where they run their pick and rolls when they are watching for switches could kind of change some of the entry pass dynamics as well. A lot of things that I think we're going to have to wait for the offseason for them to really get efficient at. Right now, it's kind of, can you make it competent? That's all I'm hoping for right now is competency.
I agree. Go ahead, Brian.
It's something that has never been something that Michigan is good at, and there's a reason for that. Michigan's been able to fix certain issues that they've had, especially on defense, so I have faith that they'll get it done. But it is going to take an off season.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It is going to take an off season. One other thought on this is that while Brian's point is that his turnover rate may be too low, and that's a really fair comment. On the other hand, as a matter of data, it's too high, because I've been tracking it, and 5 of his last 6 turnovers really weren't on him. That the official score gave it to him. My guess is his total real turnovers this year, even though it's 17 and 36 games, is more like 8.
I would love a stat and I don't know if you could find it though, you know, specific to John Teskia, when he receives a pass, you know, 3 to 5 feet from the rim, and his conversion rate on those.
There's probably only four of those though this year.
My point being is that you would think that you would be very, very high. You'd be, you know, 80%. Because he's 7'1" and he's right around the rim, but how many times have we seen him catch that pass and he's falling down or you know that kind of thing when he receives it? It could be the pass might be errant, or as I said before, all these things that they work on, his footwork is so much better. The strength and conditioning coaches, you'd be amazed at what they do with working on balance, how they really strengthen you in your core and make your balance better. And I think that's going to be a feature of his game that can really help him when it comes to finishing some of those plays around the basket, in addition to them making better passes, because some of that isn't on him. Some of that is, the passes are, like you said, one of them carried him under the rim in the last game.
I don't remember Teske having many flubs under the rim.
I do.
You do?
Yeah. He's had a few. I mean, Sam is right. He's had a few, and part of it is
but everybody has a few.
Point about... Yeah, his point about balance is right. I mean, Teske needs to work on having some sort of a post game, but Brian's correct that Michigan is going to have to at least put that as a part of its offense, because with the 1-5 switches, you've got to punish that when you put a 6-footer on a 7-foot guy.
You know? Right. So guys, let's talk about tonight's game. Everyone that I ask about, Brian included, the reaction is the same, this is gonna be kind of tough against Texas Tech tonight.
Well, they have a very unique defense that allows you to drive baseline whenever you want, and then collapses. So they have a 6'10" shot blocker who's the number 11 guy in the country in blocking shots, and he's always gonna drop into the paint into your driving lane if you go baseline. And then there's a guy coming down from the other opposite side. They just pack the paint and dare you to throw a skip pass. Now, the skip passes they know are coming, and they're very long, so they're very good at deflecting them. But it's really about trying to break their no middle strategy, because if you can get into the middle, their defense can't handle it. But that's easier said than done, obviously. They're the top defense in the country on KenPom. So
now, yes. Did you guys see the Buffalo game? Did you watch any of the game against Buffalo?
Yes.
I did not see the Buffalo game.
I was surprised in that Buffalo didn't really go with any ball screens at all. They played almost completely ISO, and they then became, they were completely unable to do anything with that defense. That defense is good. And Brian's site, I would highly commend to anybody, especially before the game, to watch, shows what this what they call a no middle defense looks like. Brian, tell me, is this mostly an NBA sort of defense? Is this something that comes out of the NBA?
I don't know about that. I don't think so. I mean, there's a lot of NBA teams try to deny the middle, but Texas Tech goes to an extreme. And they have a lot of ability to erase mistakes because of Tariq Owens, their center. They have an effective backup center, so foul trouble is not really a huge issue for them, because they have a guy named Nerense Odiasse, who is a starter-quality player as well. So that's a real luxury for any defense, allowing your center to be as aggressive as he wants, because, you know, if he goes to the bench, it's not going to be a big deal.
So question for you, Brian, in keeping with that, and you kind of alluded to this a little bit off-air, pick and pop. Now, you know, John Teske just has not been, he's just not been efficient shooting from range. Can you afford more Isaiah Livers at the five in this contest?
I think you can, because Owens is not a guy who creates his own shots. So, you know, he's a guy who is a very good finisher at the rim when he gets an assist and is able to get some putbacks, but he's the kind of guy who has four or five makes on the year that he created himself. So, are they going to dump it down to Owens and just let him go to work against Livers? Probably not. And he's 205, right? He's 6'10", but he's a beanpole. So he's probably not going to be able to back down Livers or get great post position. You do expose yourself to a little bit more, you know, lob threat, maybe some rebounding issues. But if you can put a 45% three-point shooter on the floor and they're going to ice screens and you can find ways to get him open looks from three, Every three in this game is worth 9 points.
Yeah. That's a great point.
So
that is a great point.
Like, Michigan has on a 45% three-point shooter in Livers who does not get a ton of looks. And I'm really hoping that the game plan is like Isaiah Livers gets 10 attempts from three in this game, however they can possibly get him.
Yeah, I hear you on that. I hear you on that. And Craig, I want you to pick up because that's my trouble with in forecasting this game for Michigan. You know, two really tough defensive teams. You know how Michigan's good looks, if they come, will come. You just don't know that they're going to knock them down at a high clip because you can't trust that with this team this year.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more that game by game, you're just not going to know what Michigan's going to do from three. And that's true, I think, to some extent with all teams, but it seems like it's even more problematic for Michigan. You know, there's two things. One is I absolutely agree with Brian that I think the way that you beat this defense is the short corner three. That's the easiest three to make. It's the shortest three. It's a shot that Livers shoots very well. And this defense gives you that as a potential if you can beat them down, if you can get the ball into the paint and then kick out. That three is there. But Buffalo wasn't able to do it particularly well. They weren't able to get in the paint at all, partly because they got funneled to the baseline over and over, and that's what Texas Tech is trying to do. It's an odd defense that funnels you to the baseline. You know, incidentally, that's also what the Fab Five did. They tended to funnel to the baseline because they would just put you right into Chris Webber then, who was a very, very fine defender.
They were a very effective post double down team too.
But the one thing I wonder what you guys think about this is that Texas Tech is not a great rebounding team on the defensive boards. They're number 193. And it sort of, when you look at their overall stats, it sort of sticks out. And I know Michigan doesn't obsess about going to the offensive boards, that their preference is to make sure they get back and not allow transitions and runouts. But in this case, I think this was pointed out in UM Hoops that, or someone over there did, that that Texas Tech only generates 12% in transition baskets, and which is a very low number. They tend not to get out and run very much at all. They're a more deliberate team, and their inclination is not to get out and run. So I wonder if this is a time when Michigan should attack the weak side.
Interesting point.
With another rebounder, because A, they're not really good at it. B, they tend to overshift to the ball side, which makes, you know, rebounding on the weak side a potential weakness of this defense, it seems to me. And it also seems to me that's something that Michigan may have a chance, some opportunities to use in this game. I don't know. The other thing that intrigues me is a lot of the writing about the game and talk about the game has been on sort of ball screens to the wing, but Michigan really doesn't use a lot of ball screens to the wing. We use ball screens in the, you know, within the aegis of the paint. And I saw no attempts by that, or one sort of vague attempt by Buffalo to do that, and I haven't seen Texas Tech enough in other games to know whether there's any potential in that. And I also wonder what the Michigan's coaching staff is going to come up with against a defense that we haven't, I don't know, have we seen this? I don't recall actually playing against this sort of a defense in the past.
So let's pause here. And we'll pick it up on the other side. You know, part of your description made me think of something Charles Ramsey said. I think he's watched Texas Tech four or five times, and he said that, you know, their deliberate way, it makes him think of them as a more athletic Wisconsin. because of how deliberate they are.
They do take gross charges.
They flop.
Those lean back charges.
All right, we got to get to a break. Back on the other side here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, the ticket. We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. Some great stuff from the fellas here. MGO Blog Roundtable, Brian Cook and Craig Ross in with us. No Ed Fang this week. Look for Ed next week. You know, looking around the tournament field, any other really intriguing matchups for you guys? For me, Gonzaga, Florida State.
I mean, they're all, we kind of mentioned this, it's the chalkiest tournament in a while. And I think even Oregon, who's on paper the worst team, has been on a killer streak of 10 games where they changed their defense. And I think so that's a real reason that they're a better team now. And watching
I mean, what did they change from to, Brian? Because I haven't followed Oregon.
They changed their starting lineup so that they had a little bit more length on the court, which allowed Wooten to play more as a help defender against Wisconsin. So they put their other big on Hap directly, and then Wooten just erased everything from the weak side. It was kind of a mind blowing performance.
So you view them as having a legit shot against Virginia?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to be tough for Virginia to crack, I think, defensively. And it's about how are they going to score points? And I think they're going to be there. I think all these games look like they're going to be competitive. Hopefully we'll get some buzzer beaters in seven of them.
The question that I pose, Brian, is when was the last time you went into this weekend with the Sweet 16 games going, every single team can definitely win two games, and probably every team could win four games from this point forward. It rarely ever happens.
No, and that's the upside, I guess, of a chalk tournament, where it's like last year was not. You're going into these games, and Michigan's a solid favorite, and that panned out. It depends on whether you're, I think, in the Sweet 16 or not. Like,
yeah, I'm not confident in my Gonzaga pick over Florida State.
Really,
I feel like I'm gonna come back, and that's gonna be, another pick farther away from the guy in Columbus that has a perfect bracket. The depth, the athleticism that Florida State can throw at you. They're one of the teams, when we were talking about this, they're one of the few teams that I think can really match up well with Gonzaga.
Yeah, they have two bigs who are 6'10" and 7'4". They don't really play them together very much, so it's. How are they going to be able to deal with Allen and Hachimura at the same time? Can those guys stay on the floor? Can they be on the floor without killing their Florida State's offense? But they do have the personnel.
Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting. Craig, what do you think of the LSU-Michigan State matchup? You watch LSU much?
I haven't. I saw them last year at Maui. They did beat Michigan in that game. Michigan was awful. Early in the season, in that one last year, but they're quick. I don't see. First of all, I don't see Gonzaga losing to Florida State. I'm sort of surprised about your vision on that one. I mean, that's a 74%er in KenPom, and one of the, and according to their data, at least one of the more lopsided games in the remaining game.
That would be good for me.
The LSU, I like Michigan State over LSU. I haven't seen a lot of LSU. I saw them a little bit this year, and I just think Michigan State's a better team. In fact, I think Michigan State will beat Duke, too, if they play Duke. Duke should have lost to UCF. They got some officiating help.
You thought so? What call didn't you like?
The push in the back on that.
No, the call that was missed, guys, it was the hook and hold. Delorier on the opposite side on that rebound had a blatant hook and hold. The putback should have been waved off. UCF should have been up one, going to the line for two with the ball after that, and had a chance to ice the game. That's the actual, the worst of the blown calls was a hook and hold on the rebound.
Well, I mean, both of them, but I think Coach K told him to foul him on the offensive rebound and see if they'll call it. Because if they miss the free throw, then they're going to have to foul anyway. So you might as well just discard the rules of the game and see if anyone is mas macho enough to make the call.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm not surprised the ref didn't blow a whistle in that particular instance. Two plays for UCF that jump out to me. The missed alley-oop was huge.
Yeah.
And then, you know, same player, Aubrey Dawkins, had a great game, but has his game winner.
She was phenomenal.
Had his game winner rim out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, just a tough deal. But here's my thing with what you said, Craig. The game was so impacted by tackle fall. I mean, that guy, when he was in the contest, I think they said that Duke shot 36% from the field.
Yeah.
When he was out, they shot like 63%.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was like plus 15 or something.
It was amazing the impact he had on the game. There aren't any other tackle falls.
In the tournament?
In the tournament.
In the world? In college
basketball? That's not to say that other teams can't do things to limit Duke going to the basket, but like that? Like UCF just did. I don't know if they're gonna see another team that's capable of doing them that way.
Well, the interesting thing is that UCF was just abandoning the 3-point line when Fall was not on the court. So you know they had I think Goldwire is a 10% 3-point shooter and he hit like two, and they were just like, you can have any three you want, any open three, any player, just don't take twos, and they were able to hit enough in that period. But like that's not the worst approach, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it wouldn't even stun me if Virginia Tech beat Duke. I mean, I saw the Virginia Tech game the Duke game in their first round against North Dakota State, and they weren't impressive in that game. They won in the end, but easily. But that wasn't an impressive showing to my eye by Duke. And Virginia Tech is a solid team. I think that's going to be a really close game. To me, that's a closer game than the Gonzaga Florida State game.
Wow, you're talking like that's going to be a blowout.
He's just being Eeyore. He's just like Michigan State. It's going to happen.
I mean, I hope you're right.
Well, what
for
do
my
you
bracket
guys
sake.
Think about Michigan State? I mean, they're going to win. They're going to make it into the eight.
I think I have them winning. You know, the thing that we had Ramsey on earlier this week, and he said he feels like this is a contest that is going to challenge Michigan State more defensively than they have been when it comes to Cassius Winston and Matt McQuaid. He feels like those guys are going to have there's a chance that one or both of those guys can be exposed in this matchup.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you have Waters.
Waters is quick, man. He's quick. We saw him last year. He's a real player, and he will pressure Winston. Sorry, Brian. Go ahead.
And he's a guy who can just get an ISO. He doesn't need a screen, and he can just go to the basket. So that's definitely something that you're gonna want to look out for. And I think he can probably maybe do a little bit better at getting around Tillman, who's obviously an excellent defender. But Waters is one of the quickest guys in the country.
The thing about Tillman is, you know, Tillman isn't at an athletic deficit in this game. And I think, you know, Ramsey's point is he thinks those both of those guys in their matchups are going to be at an athletic deficit. And we'll see if that.
I just have a hard time seeing it because, like, LSU was barely coached when they had Will Wade. And I know that he's going to be, like, doing the game plan and all this stuff. But, like, the dude just buys players, and that's why he got to LSU. And, like, Izzo just takes those teams apart.
And one other thing to think about, LSU has been pretty dreadful in the second half of their first two games of the tournament. Michigan State is a terrific second-half team.
Mm-hmm.
So unless LSU is up by, like, 25 at the half, they're not in a safe position no matter what their lead might be. They've been terrible shooting the ball in the second half, and Michigan State is the opposite.
And, you know, they just went down to the wire with Maryland. We saw what happened when Maryland played Michigan State.
They went down to the wire with Yale. Forget Maryland. I mean, Maryland's a real team. I mean, they went down to the wire with Yale. That was, you know, both of those games were games they could have lost. So I don't see.
So Michigan State winning going away is what you're saying, Craig.
Probably. The good part is that we won't have a Final Four team that's obviously being vacated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this, watching LSU play is surreal because it's just like, this game is not happening. This game does not exist. We suspended the coach. but we didn't suspend the player. We're like, okay, that's okay.
Makes no sense. It makes no sense. I'm right there with you. Great stuff as always, fellas. Craig, you got a tan yet, man?
I have a tan, and when I get back next week, you won't recognize me.
Okay. I don't recognize you anyway.
I know, you don't. But aside from that, you won't recognize
me. All right. Well, safe travels, my man. Thanks a lot for joining us from Hawaii, waking up early in the morning.
Better than us!
No!